Welcome to Top of the Game with Javier Sade, where we talk to amazing people that are shaping the world. These lightning round talks explore what makes remarkable leaders tick. Thinkers and doers, pushing humankind forward and at the top of their game. Impactful insights, global perspectives, valuable wisdom you can use every day in your life and work. This is Top of the Game. Enjoy today's episode. Here's Javier.
Phyllis Campbell is one of the most prolific leaders in the Pacific Northwest and has had a remarkable five-decade career. She currently serves on the boards of Remitly, Sanmar, Air Transport Services Group, Allen Institute, and is the Edward Fritzky Chair in Leadership at the University of Washington's Foster School of Business. Until a few years ago, she served as chairman of the board of the Pacific Northwest region of JPMorgan Chase, preceded by leading the Seattle Foundation as its CEO, and also served as president of U.S. Bank of Washington. She previously held seats on the boards of Nordstrom, Puget Sound Energy, Safeco, Alaska Airlines, Washington Roundtable, and was chairman of the U.S.-Japan Council. Phyllis has received several awards for her corporate and community involvement. She writes and speaks often on topics that include high-performing teams, board effectiveness, business strategy, leadership, authenticity, and purpose. Phyllis holds a bachelor's degree from Washington State University and an MBA from the University of Washington. Enjoy the conversation. Phyllis, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you for so many reasons. People know who you are, but they don't know necessarily why you are. Phyllis, tell us a little bit about, it'd be interesting to hear about a little bit of your background, some hardship, you know, anything you want to tell us that kind of elucidates on why you ended up in this amazing path.
Well, thank you. I'll try to keep it somewhat brief, but being Japanese American has probably been a central part of my story. And when I say that, I come from a family on my father's side that was actually interned in the Japanese American internment during World War II. And so that has become a part of me, not because I was obviously there, but because all of the stories struck me about stories of, yes, discrimination and hysteria. And my father's father was taken to a military base in North Dakota, thinking that he was a spy out of Seattle. And then the rest of my father's family was interned in a camp in Minidoka, Idaho. My father, however, got out because he was still in high school and they put him in a foster family in Spokane. So he didn't actually go to an internment camp. But what struck me about his story, and it shapes my story a bit, is that he, in spite of all the hardships his family endured, he enrolled in the U.S. Army to fight for the United States of America. And he used to talk about loyalty to country, which his father taught him. In spite of everything, he did that. So when he came back to Spokane after he was discharged, he couldn't get a job because there was still a lot of discrimination. And he said he was in his U.S. Army uniform. He couldn't even get served lunch. And it was really hard for me to understand as a young person growing up in Spokane and not having experienced this directly myself. But I think it taught me of several things. One is his amazing loyalty to country, his amazing ethos of give back and do the right thing. And it doesn't matter how you're treated, keep going. So he finally found a job as a dry cleaner, and then he eventually owned his own business, which we worked in the business. So I really learned the value of then hard work, and I saw him amazing resilience, you know, positive nature. Okay, we have obstacles, and I've had obstacles. It doesn't matter. We're lucky to be in this country, the United States. We're lucky to be in Spokane. We've got a great community. Move ahead. Just work hard, get your education, and you know, things will turn out just fine. And so that really inspired me as a young person growing up.
The dichotomy of this country, right? It's such an amazing place. And yet it has done, like all countries, some disgusting things that we want to put under the rug and stuff. But like gumption it takes to be slapped in the face, abused and all this stuff. And then at the same time, love it so much that you want to serve it. There's just so much to unpack there.
Well, I think it's the story of immigrants widely, you know, told your story, a lot of people's stories. So, you know, if you actually look at it, I always say to people, immigrants are here just to seek a better life. Immigrants want to get here because they want their kids to get educated. They want opportunities that we had that were open to us that I thought to myself, if I was born in Japan, I probably wouldn't have had as a woman. So I actually, it was just a combination of circumstances that brought me to Spokane and then, you know, brought me eventually into a higher education and then into a job in banking. So a lot of things that happened that I look back and think, there for the grace of God, go we.
We're both lucky to call this amazing place home along with 360 million others. So let's skip a little bit. I mean, most people in Seattle know who you are. You've straddled these worlds. You ran the largest foundation here. You ran the largest bank here, ended up chairing the operation for JP Morgan. Walk us a little bit through your kind of arc, maybe something you're proud of within that arc. It's quite remarkable. Like everybody on the show, they've, you know, achieved great things.
Well, thank you. I do think my story is a lot about mentors and sponsors that saw things in me throughout my career that I didn't see in myself. Because going back to my original story, I think I thought, my father thought, my parents thought, if I could become, once I went into banking, the branch manager of a bank or maybe a region manager of several branches, that would be the pinnacle of a career, given, I think, our modest beginnings. So a lot of people that saw something in me early on, my first mentor was the chairman of my first bank, David Clack. Actually, he's still vital at age 93 skiing. And, you know, amazing. He's amazing. But he said to me, you know, you've got something special and I can't put my finger on it, but you are going to do big things, but you need to believe it. And I'm going to give you some opportunities. Offered me the opportunity to get my executive MBA at the University of Washington. The bank paid for it. Things like that, that I just thought, this is unbelievable that somebody sees this in me. I don't know what they see because I see myself as a great branch manager, a great banker, but, you know, could I ever be the president of this bank? Heck no, I never saw that. But he saw it. And then subsequently, he opened these amazing doors like the advanced degree opportunity that I had. Then I got sent to the Stanford Executive Management Program. And I think that's what opened my eyes to kind of a global mindset, which I would have never had I not gone to Stanford or University of Washington Foster School. But I got to go to these schools with amazing global people who were doing unbelievable things in business. So it kind of opened my eyes, and I thought, there's a big world out there, even though I'm a small town kid from Spokane. All of a sudden, then come to my second mentor, who used to tell me, get ready, be ready. I'd say, you know, what do you mean by that? And he said, you never know what door is going to open for you, so just be ready. Be ready intellectually, be ready emotionally, be ready to take risks, step through those doors that you can't even see today. And sure enough, he opened a door for me to become president of U.S. Bank of Washington, which at my relatively young age, there were no women running these large banks. So I was scared to death. I almost said no. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's going to be a public, certainly announcement, but it's also going to be a public failure if I don't do well. And oh my gosh, maybe I shouldn't do this. He said, you are ready. Remember, I've told you, I wouldn't ask you if I didn't think you're ready. And you need to believe it as a woman of color, I've got your back. So I did it. And I made a ton of mistakes. And I made some public mistakes. And I have to say, you know, taking risk involves, tripping and falling and making mistakes. But I learned that it's never fatal. It's just a good teacher. If you can get over it, learn something, then, you know, the next risk is even probably a bit easier, maybe not 100% easier. But the next get ready, to your point, was running after I had a great career as the president of this great bank. Then I took a little sabbatical, and then the Seattle Foundation, the Community Foundation, opened. And again, it was a get ready. I didn't never run a nonprofit. I was on the board, but that's very different. And again, the board said, you know, we'd like you to step off the board and actually compete for this job because you have a great business background, but you also have a heart for community. And the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, this is a good give back time for me. So I stepped off the board, competed, the get ready was. It was supposed to be my next job. So I loved it. You know, I did it for 6 years running the foundation, helping to grow and scale it with a great team. And then I thought that I would continue to do that. And then the last get ready, which you pointed out, was 2008 hit financial crisis. And I thought, this is going to be terrible for the community, for philanthropy. Had really had nothing to do with me personally, so I thought, till Jamie Dimon called and said, you know, WAMU's failed now. We need somebody who's a well-known Seattle leader, somebody who's had banking. You're the only one that can help bring our brand to the Pacific Northwest and West Coast and bring the businesses and be trusted. And I said, trust? I said, boy, you might trust me and all of that. And I maybe can see why you might want me, but I don't need this job because this is not going to be easy and I don't need it at this point in my life. And I really didn't think it was going to be my job. But later I thought, you know, this is what I do, hard things. This is going to be something that maybe I'm one of the few people that can do this well. So sense of duty called. Maybe it's my dad's, you know, loyalty story, the loyalty to community causes and what I do. And so I said yes. And it was really hard. It was really hard. But, you know, 14 years later, I decided to leave JP Morgan Chase. I had a good sense that, you know, I fulfilled my sense of duty and obligation, and it actually was an experience that was fantastic.
Just an incredible, it sounds like a squiggly line, right? But you connected the dots looking back in this issue of having people in your life that have more confidence in you, that you have in you, is as you get older, and I'm implying you're older, but you're now that mentor, right? You're now looking at the community, you've given back, you've run things, you've invested in things, you've been on boards of iconic companies, Nordstrom, Alaska, Air. And now you have kind of this interesting collection of things. And part of your role, I think implicit role, is doing what these mentors did for you before, because, you know, of the 10,000 baby boomers that have pushed through and trailblazed for my generation, Generation X, and we're 100,000 and we're trailblazing for the next 10 million. So tell me a little bit how you see your role now, which is more obviously hard influence and power, but also dispensing with that in a way that's meaningful.
Well, absolutely. I always say to people, we never make these journeys alone, which is my story. And then we stand on the shoulders of giants, however you want to say it. But it, to the point that you're making, it's an obligation to pay it forward. So I'm lucky at this point in my life that I never have actually done anything for money. But, you know, I'm at a point now where I'm comfortable, don't have to worry about where the next meal's coming from. And so I have the freedom to mentor, to give back, to pay it forward, however you say it. So I've been really lucky. Again, get ready. The next door that opened was another board, Remitly, Remitly Global, which helps immigrants save money and wire money seamlessly and inexpensively to their home countries. It was a way to give back. And I said, I don't need another board. I don't certainly do it for the money, glory. I do it because I love the cause. I love the mission. I love helping the people that Remitly helps. And then Foster School of Business, another door opened, the Ed Fritzky Endowed Chair in Leadership, to work with students, MBAs, to help them kind of frame the give back. What do you think about in leadership? How do you make an impact? I love that. And then it's, as you would guess, I mentor so many women and people of color to get on boards, to open doors, to step up as people told me to step up. Mm-hmm. And it is a way to pay it forward. So it's something that I'm very fortunate in my life to be able to do now and have a little more time to do post JP Morgan Chase full-time job. But it's also a little bit, I would say, of having humility in my life to say, I also want to learn. I'm still at the point of my life where, look, I can learn. It's not just giving back and doing the right thing, but I love learning. So I look for opportunities to be with smart people on boards or to meet people like you or to interact with maybe new types of businesses or new types of trends that are going on and just deep dive and learn all I can, which is really a fun part of my life. And I tell my students, Look, learning is lifelong. It needs to be a passion, and intellectual curiosity will always serve you well. So I hope I'm somewhat of a model of that.
You are, and yes, learning and curiosity are the foundation for all human innovation and endeavor. No question. To close it out, Phyllis, it'd be great to hear a little bit about what you see. You know, you've sat on a bunch of boards, you ran a bank, you've done all these things at the wedge of capitalism. But capitalism has been around for 250 years. It's still the best economic system that has ever existed. It has blemishes, just like our democracy and our country. But, you know, how people call it capitalism 2.0, responsible capitalism, and there's this kind of polarization, AI taking away jobs, but creating new ones.
Well, it's a great question, and I think it is the question that every company is wrestling with right now. So I think there's a couple, I guess, aspects I'd like to maybe explore with your question. One is about culture, and the other is about a stakeholder view. So the culture piece to me is where it all starts. So when I work with companies, when I choose to be part of a company, I really look first at the culture, the values of the founders, the board, and that really drives, I think, so much of what happens. And when I say what happens, I mean in a greatness way. So great companies start with great culture. There's no question about that. But what is that culture? Well, to me, again, it's do the right thing. It's a company that looks at more than just its shareholders as stakeholders. It says something like, if our employees don't do well, if society doesn't do well, if our customers are not served in the best manner possible, if we're not producing world-class products that are sustainable, if we're not having world-class partners and suppliers that are true partners, then we're not going to be successful in the long term. And to me, that is absolutely the model that has to be embedded in every board and every management team and every company, to me, that's going to last for the next 50 years and going to make our society more sustainable and prosperous when all people can benefit. And again, I look at great companies that I've been a privilege to be a part of, like Nordstrom Alaska, as you mentioned, and now Remitly and Sanmar and others that I'm involved with. And this is absolutely their philosophy. So I feel very lucky that particularly here in the Pacific Northwest, which is, I think, a culture of philanthropy, of giving back, of making sure communities and societies are better, that I'm here, that I get to be anchored here, and that many companies that espouse this philosophy are headquartered here and are doing very well.
Companies that figure this out, in fact, accrete value to shareholders. People think it takes away from, but in fact, if you get it right, you get customers for life, you get employees that are committed, all this stuff. It's an interesting way to end because you, Phyllis, are a big leader here in the Pacific Northwest and by consequence, the country.
Thank you.
And the country is lucky to have somebody like you. I definitely appreciate you spending a little bit of time with me, and I'm sure the listeners are going to love this. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. For information and links about today's guests, check out the show notes and visit topofthegame-thepod.com. Your host, Javier Sade, the show Top of the Game. Thanks for listening.